What happens if you take one of the biggest media service companies that has been developing and deploying AI in its own business for many years, and you team them up with a global tech giant that's become synonymous with Copilot AI? The answer is you get one of the most intriguing and timely partnerships in media, the kind of partnership that makes AI genuinely hot rather than genuinely hype. And what could be more helpful than that as we come up to the next NAB? My name is Mark Harrison, the DPP's founder and chief content officer. And in this podcast, I get to talk to two people from the flight deck of Copilot AI. As each industry trade show comes round, the DPP now prepares itself for a special report. We call it Demand versus Supply. And what we do is we think back to all the conversations we've been having with the customer community in the preceding months, and we pick out four topics that we feel are really important to them at the moment. And then we go to the trade show, whether it's NAB or IBC, and we assess just how effectively the vendor community is meeting that current area of demand. As we get ready for NAB 2024, one of the four key areas for us that we're going to be looking at is Copilot AI. And actually, we're going to be partnering with Prime Focus Technologies in presenting that part of our report, drawing on their expertise to provide a forward to our discussion of Copilot AI, state of the demand, and the state of supply. But I've been talking to David Thompson, our technology strategist at the DPP, because he has been talking in turn to the customer community about some of the specific things they're thinking about when they consider Copilot AI. And he's told me all sorts of things that are hugely interesting and will be reflected in our report. But three really stood out for me, and they were these. The first is that already the wow factor about generative AI has faded, and customers are asking vendors, how will AI benefit my bottom line? They're getting very granular and business-like about it already. The second is that they have concerns, but actually many of their concerns, not simply about the origin of the AI itself, it's actually about whether their own staff fully appreciate that they are accountable for the AI that they use, and therefore they need to understand it. And thirdly, they're already finding that large language models are a very effective way of simplifying human interaction with machines. Indeed, one customer pointed out that they discovered a task one of their teams performing, which had now become simple chat prompt, was in the process saving 200 keystrokes. So it's very interesting to consider generative AI as actually a new kind of UI. So with those things on our mind, I am really, really delighted to bring together two people who are in close partnership at the moment working in this area. The first is Ramki Sankaranarayanan, who's the founder and global CEO at Prime Focus Technologies. And the second is Andy Beach, the worldwide CTO for Media and Entertainment at Microsoft. So welcome to you both. Thank you very much for joining the DPP podcast. I'm actually going to put the first question, if I may, to Ramki. And then I'll come back to you, Andy. Ravi, I'm really keen to know, because Prime Focus Technologies has been committed to AI for many, many years now and investing in it very heavily. Does it feel to you as if generative AI represents a step change? Has something fundamentally changed?
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me. We've been investing in AI for now, I think, seven plus years. Our initial approach to our investments in AI was really sort of, you know, from an automation standpoint. And I think the first sort of several years of our investment sort of went in that area. I think to me, generative AI has fundamentally changed this evolution, both from a technology perspective and then readiness to adoption perspective. One, because I think businesses are, you know, generative AI is now kitchen and sort of dining table conversations. So businesses are a little more sort of, you know, aware, and, you know, the business departments are a little more sort of inquisitive and curious and sort of, you know, really sort of in some sense demanding of technology and operating departments to say, you know, what is that that this can do for the business? And I think that's kind of, you know, to me, a very notable, you know, thing that this has brought on. Of course, you know, technologically, the capabilities of generative AI sort of, you know, lends itself to doing a lot more things that are possible, that, you know, this can get a bit more pervasive in really solving specific, you know, entertainment industry sort of, you know, if you will, problems. And, you know, our ability to reimagine and bring it to life just gotten a little more closer with the generative AI coming through.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. And Andy, of course, Microsoft has played a huge role in this, in making generative AI a topic of conversation, as Ramki says, sort of for everyone. Does it feel to you like, I don't know, a little bit like that moment of shifting from computing being all about being able to code to actually personal computers that are very, very easy to use? Is that what a lot of the shift is about, that people can actually now easily imagine what it's like to work with an AI in a way they just couldn't even 2 years ago?
I think the analogy I've often used to equate it is when we went from computers being a tool in our home that weren't connected broadly to other networks and other areas, to being this interconnected communication tool that we could use for research, collaboration, communication, a variety of topics. It went from being a tool to a collaborator. And that's exactly what AI is doing right now. AI was a tool we were using, but generative AI, in particularly as in the form of a co-pilot, brings this collaboration element where it's an assistant that's helping all of us do and achieve more.
You know, we're talking now about the use of it as a co-pilot, a term given to us, I think, really by Microsoft. But what does that actually mean to you, Andy?
And for me, it really comes back to reinforcing that fact that we aren't replacing people, we're augmenting what people are doing. It's not autopilot, it is truly there with you. It needs our input and it needs our direction in order to get the best out of it for what it's doing. It's taking repetitive tasks off of our hand and it's giving us the ability to go expand our thought or our creativity across a broader range of topics more rapidly.
So as I was indicating earlier on with that example about kind of reducing the number of keystrokes to a simple voice prompt, it's about changing the computing experience.
Yeah. It becomes less of us using the computer as a tool to crank out a dozen different varieties of copies or scripts or forms or emails. And it's allowing us to use it to coordinate those tasks and to have it help create some of that output for us in our own voice.
And for you, Ramki, I guess part of what you're trying to communicate to customers is the potential of this technology to earn them more revenue, primarily actually by being able to reduce the time to revenue, by actually being able to make more of what they have and get it to market faster. Would that be true?
That's fair, Mark. You know, sometimes the default thought processes is that AI, given its ability to automate, is only a tool to kind of become more efficient. That's the notion that we're building on from, to say that AI can be a very useful tool to kind of, you know, find newer possibilities. And those newer possibilities, one of the important manifestations we believe in is to sort of really bring this ability to kind of, you know, contribute to new revenue opportunities. Much of our own technology investments, you know, building on from the you know, its native ability to automate, is more and more focused on helping customers sort of, you know, work on more newer opportunities from a revenue perspective.
Interesting. So you kind of could say in a way that the first wave of AI was about potentially saving money, and now this new wave is about potentially making money.
That's right. And I think, to me, I think, we're a huge believer of sort of, this co-pilot, approach to AI, because we primarily believe that, all we are trying to do in this endeavor is, like Andy mentioned, AI lets people become more creative. And that's very central to the business we are all in from an entertainment perspective, that, if you're able to put more creative time, we are able to tell better stories, we're able to market these stories better, and kind of, at the end of the day, sum total of all of this is sort of try and get more consumer eyeballs to consume the content. And so that, I think, is the approach. And so this is, this enablement outlook is not only to support sort of, new content that is being created, but also to sort of really leverage all their historical investments and bring it to life in such a way that, it's a little more friendlier, ready to kind of, if you will, kind of get it closer to the consumer and consumer's attention.
I guess this is a slightly different way of thinking about the word creative, Andy, isn't it? Because it's very easy when we say that AI can now release creativity, everybody sort of rushes to the on-screen image and incredible things that we can do now using generative AI with video and audio. And of course, that's all true, and we can do that. But when we say be creative with it, we don't just mean that, do we? We also mean being creative in the background, being creative in our business processes.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's not just the sort of the text to video, text to image kind of things. Those are like very much front and center of notoriety because it is so transformative. But it is the ability to iterate on creativity faster, to be able to branch off into dozens or even hundreds of new ideas on a topic or an idea more rapidly so that you can find the one that resonates. I think so much of creativity right now is trying to, this is another one that sort of comes in here a lot, is like 30 or 40 years ago, entertainment as a whole was so much more homogenous. And we all watch sort of the same thing from the same types of devices or the same platforms. And now all of that is so much more fragmented that the expectations per platform and per device and per audience segment are very different, and per generation are all very different. And so being able to have a core central idea, but then be able to use things like generative AI to help personalize that and customize it to that device, that segment, that platform is critical. And it's almost impossible for particularly small companies to scale with humans to meet the needs of all of those devices. They have to pick and choose where their audience is going to be. This allows you to expand that thinking more broadly to all of those places more rapidly. It is that scale motion.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, of course, huge potential for a large media organizations, but huge potential for small ones too, to actually punch above their weight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of the big platforms are looking at how they're going to deal with it and utilize it for themselves. But I think the small creators that have become so dominant are going to leverage this to get their voice out there even more than they have in years past.
Now, let's just talk about why it is that I'm talking to the two of you. Because as I just alluded to just now, Prime Focus Technologies has been investing in AI and committed to it for some time. We all know that Microsoft has. What's brought you together? Andy, perhaps I could just start with you. How did you come to find PFT on your journey?
Sure. Prime Focus has been a partner of Microsoft's for a long time. They leverage a lot of the Azure cognitive services and AI capabilities in their solution, along with other AI that they have been working on. But as generative AI sort of came into being and began to be announced, Prime Focus was a very early adopter and was very aggressive about partnering with us to ideate on how we take and leverage it, particularly within the use cases that supply chain customers that they've serviced need to be able to use. And so it's been a wonderful relationship exploring and diving. I mean, across the board, one of the tasks I've had for the last 2 years has really been sort of identifying those key use cases that were going to be the quick early places that people should think about adopting it and bringing it in. But having Prime Focus there as a partner was great, so that we could think about how we both pick up data from earlier in the productions and pre-production, and then how the output from what they're doing can leverage distribution down the pipeline.
And I think, to me, the Microsoft's leadership in the generative AI space with their OpenAI partnership, and that has been a game changer for us in the way we've been able to now push the envelope a little more. And I want to just call out that it is not that I think has been sort of the central sort of, you know, idea behind the collaboration, so that, you know, we can both together bring in the difference to customers sooner and in a more meaningful way.
But it sounds to me as if Prime Focus is really benefiting from all the breadth of Microsoft's expertise, the fact that Microsoft works across multiple industries, it's got this huge experience, you know, that's very complex and rich, but in a lot of spaces. And then Microsoft benefits from the fact that Prime Focus is a media and entertainment specialist and can do really interesting things with taking some of that technology and applying it to specific media use cases. Is that a fair characterization, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the value they bring as a MAM and AI partner in this space, and understanding the workflows that are typical, helps us think about where we bring that broad set of AI tools in to do specific elements that are immediately valuable to our joint customers.
Now, of course, you know, your organizations have both gone early and gone hard on AI and generative AI in particular. When you speak to customers, do you find there's a fear of being early adopters? Is there a tendency to say that they would prefer to wait and let this field settle down? And if they do say that, what's your reply?
I know. I think you're always going to kind of find a mix of customers driven by their incumbencies and sort of, you know, priorities. Mark is going to kind of, you know, take on any new technology sooner and some later, I think. But having said that, the fact that, you know, we have a big services operation as Prime Focus Technologies, that we operate content supply chains for customers, that kind of has given us a huge canvas to innovate, which means that, you know, we have those operating units as early adopters to test all the technology that we are creating. You know, we have a large creative services operation where we are focused on marketing services, for instance. So this ability for us to, so any of the creative aspects of that set of representative end users, we're not really sort of understanding the end use and how AI can reimagine it. You know, that also gives us the ability for us to test this and not test the technology, but the adoption and what are the reservations that they have in adoption, and kind of understanding the human mindsets and sometimes also learning that when you're reimagining, it is not reimagining exactly the way humans go about doing it or the current incumbent processes. But, you know, with AI, maybe there is a new way to kind of approach it so that it is really beneficial. So now you go share these experiences with customers, I think there's a lot more receptivity. Because, you know, we're not putting a shiny tool in their lap, but, you know, we're also seeing where we've been able to make it work, where we're struggling to make it work, and kind of where we are kind of invested in and what the promise is. This, I think, has been sort of making our conversations with customers a little more meaningful and, you know, in some sense, also alleviating some of their fears and reservations about how you may sort of, you know, if you will, how this sort of starts to work for the business.
I find that so interesting, Ramki, that you've kind of made yourselves your own customer, as it were. You've tested on yourselves, but not just from a technology point of view, but also actually from a business change point of view. So you've actually, no doubt, lived through some of the cultural challenges, some of the operational challenges around adopting these tools, and you've had that experience within your own company, so you actually can talk genuinely about it. I do find that really fascinating.
Similarly to Ramke and Prime Focus, Microsoft refers to its own employees as customer zero for AI. We are all not only expected, we're encouraged, we're given lots of education and opportunity to use it in our everyday work life so that we can help explain it to others in a way that if we weren't consuming it and using it ourselves, we wouldn't be able to. And I think that has dramatically helped. And it certainly has been, particularly the recent near term, we've seen a lot of customers who are now standing up projects and understanding sort of what are the KPIs, what are the success metrics that they really need to look at, to the point you brought and opened this podcast with around like keystrokes. Is that one that they should consider? Or is it time to air for content? Or is it other elements? Like they're now defining that, and that's helping them understand what the implications of this are going to be once they put it into larger production scale.
And what are you finding, both of you, are in the media and entertainment space, are the areas that are already working really well? Where can we talk about genuine maturity?
So, Mark, we look at this sort of space at large in three buckets. One's a content management bucket, one's a content creation bucket, and one's a content marketing and distribution bucket. The content management bucket, we're seeing a fair bit of pronounced adoption in many of the activities. So for instance, trying to kind of get time-coded metadata, which is normally sort of, you know, a human process, it's technical in nature, you know, that sort of, you know, saves, for instance, you know, someone like ITV, an activity sort of would have taken for an asset maybe 25 to 30 minutes. Now it takes sort of, you know, 2 to 3 minutes. Aspects like that, sort of we've seen wider adoption. Finding sort of, you know, this construct of people are sitting on a significant amount of archive content. We call them passive archives. In these archives, there is obviously need for better organization. There is need for finding duplicates, need for consolidation so that it is ready to be monetized, if you will. We're seeing a cross-section of use cases. Now, this could mean conforming different audio and text artifacts into a source video file that would be there in the enterprise, and then finding sort of, you know, you have a cross-section of versions, but you don't have documented what these versions are up to, but trying to find out the differences between the versions and, you know, aspects like that. All of them fit into this construct of, you know, this ability to kind of convert passive archives into active libraries.
Turning these archives into intelligent or active libraries is a huge and fundamental shift. That notion of being able to like have a conversation with your content archive and interrogate it around questions, those are the time-saving devices that are going to be huge. You know, so much time is spent finding the right clips or determining whether something's there. And today, it's probably the creatives that are leveraging that more in this space. But I think there's other operational parts of the businesses that are going to see great value in that. Like imagine the legal teams being able to rights clear things faster because they can just ask a question of a service of where logos appear or, you know, which markets something is currently available in, and have that not be a 3-week exercise of people having to gather a lot of information together, but it just be a response. There's a lot of key insights there as we think across how this expands through the entire business long-term.
So finally, then, I think actually that's quite a good segue into talking about the relationship between Microsoft and Prime Focus for the future, because you clearly could go off in so many different directions. Do you have a clear sense of where you want to focus your partnership and your efforts in the months and years ahead, Ramke?
We generally believe, Mark, in that, you know, we don't want to reinvent the wheel if somebody has done something very well. And generative AI anyway is sort of, you know, is a space that sort of, you know, that we reliant on some of the big players like Microsoft to sort of really go to the forefront of that in work. But what we then do is combine our small models with these large models. And so in that sense, I think bring out those unique value to customers in the way the combined sort of promise sort of comes around. And so, yeah, you know, I think we've long way to go, you know, we're quite thrilled about the early wins that we're getting together. But like I said, committed to go the long haul. And as we've heard often by the leading experts, that the opportunity for AI is even bigger than mobile and internet. You know, if that is the case, you know, this, you know, that's what gives us so much excitement for the future in this partnership together with Microsoft.
Yeah, and to that point, Andy, I guess one of the things that we have to accept about this technological moment is we're not in a place where something's going to get finished. This is something that will now go on changing forever.
Yeah, we are at a sea change moment that we will see ripples and implications and micro changes that go on in the way we think about it and do it as it infuses into the work and frankly into our entire lives. As we think about how it goes, I think when I think about where we are with Prime Focus, totally agree with Ramki that like we're kind of just at the beginning of a new stage of the partnership. And as I think about how we bring other pieces of data together with all the knowledge they have about the content, being able to bring user habits and what's being talked about in social, all of those together will allow them to do so much more with that personalization at scale. And I think that's a lot of where we start seeing the shifts in patterns and the way that we work together happen is making it feel highly customized and personalized to individuals without that being a hard lift or a hard task.
Yeah, personalization at scale without having to necessarily be of huge scale yourself. I think that's a really interesting message on which to end. So thank you both so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you both and so interesting to hear about this relationship. Of course, Microsoft and Prime Focus Technologies will both be at NAB and people really should hurry along to meet the teams there and find out more about not just this particular relationship, but what else both companies are doing right now. So Ramki, Andy, thank you so much for joining me and have a great show.